The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Agent for Truth radio show, brought to you courtesy of Truth Frequency Radio Network. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, your host. AgentForTruth.com and FreedomAboveFortune.com. First things first, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven, so let us pray together as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive. Ready to get it there into the boat and row with us. Don't just go along for the ride. We have a really special guest. All my guests are special, but this gentleman is extra. He's been there to help fight the battles with me, and praise God he has been, because I couldn't have done it without him. And that is Robert Bernhoft of the Bernhoft Law Firm. Their website is bernhoftlaw.com. Spelled B-E-R-N-H-O-F-T, bernhoftlaw.com. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's a real pleasure to appear again and talk to you about stuff that really matters today.
Well, it's awesome to have you, and you know, this is a no-caller show so that we can just fill it with as much of the information that you can provide to the listeners as possible. Thought that we could talk about a few different things, but why don't we start with the some current events, like those the IRS scandal. There's so many of them, but let's talk about the one that's so fresh in everyone's minds. The lost emails, Lois Lerner taking the fifth, the targeting of particular groups. Why don't you lay the groundwork and just tell people what's really going on?
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate it. This is a really important topic. So often over the past several years, maybe the past 4 or 5 years, the usual suspect talking heads and spin doctors and meisters and meistresses want to, you know, pass off or disdain scandals relating to agencies or government transparency, government corruption, these sorts of issues. Particularly during the Obama administration for the past 5 or 6 years. And so, you know, we want another, certainly it is true in our hotly charged political environment with the, in my view, different sides of the same coin, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats lobbing verbal rhetorical bombs at each other rather than getting down to brass tacks and talking about serious policy issues that affect Americans here on Main Street, you know, down on the ground level. So we want to be careful when we take a look at certain news items and do our own vetting and do our own investigation. And I think everybody on your show does that. That's one of the reasons I love appearing here. We know that your listeners are paying attention. They're doing their own homework. They're fact-checking. This is a real scandal of significant proportion, and I'll tell you why. One of the things that hasn't been talked about in the IRS's explicit targeting of libertarian, Tea Party, constitutionalist, and or conservative political advocacy groups is the history of IRS and administrations, executive branch officials using IRS for political purposes. Recall that, you know, there was the old Bureau of Internal Revenue back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and then it changed to the Internal Revenue Service, and then we had the 1954 Internal Revenue Code, but that's still a fairly new creature, this Internal Revenue Service, on the scale of history. So we have to go back to the Nixon administration, Joe, but many people don't recollect, and it wasn't much talked about for years after Nixon's resignation. but it was a hot topic before his impeachment and resignation. And that is that Nixon, the accusation, and it was proved after the fact, the accusation that Nixon had done the unthinkable and he had turned the American tax police against his political opponents. And when I say he did the unthinkable, it was always considered absolutely off limits, an absolute political taboo to take an agency, an entity like the Internal Revenue Service with the extraordinary civil and criminal investigative powers that IRS has and use it for political purposes. That is to say, give the IRS a list of your enemies and your opponents, which Nixon did, and tell them to go get them. And in many ways, this was considered back prior to impeachment, again, in resignation. Many insiders believe that Nixon's greatest sin, if you will, was using the IRS for his own political benefit against his perceived and actual enemies. It's a very significant issue. But subsequently, people don't really recall that, and it's not much talked about. So let's fast forward to the last year to 18 months, 2 years or so, and now we have President Obama in office. And it's my view, it's my belief that if a real investigation with proper subpoena power is ever conducted by the Senate or the House, that we will in fact find out that the Obama administration, they essentially crossed the Rubicon. They crossed the river that you're never supposed to cross. And I believe he would be the first president since Nixon's impeachment and resignation that has utilized the IRS for expressly political purposes. And I think it says something about the current administration, not just President Obama, but the people, his chief advisors and the people that he surrounded himself with, the sort of things they're willing to do for political benefit. And so that's the historical background for what I think is an extraordinarily important issue. It is a scandal of significant proportion. If it ever gets investigated, I believe it will lead directly to the Oval Office. Lesser things have brought presidents down. So we're watching it very carefully.
Couldn't agree more. And what's sad is that every time a president or congressman, they lower the bar, you know, and they do the unthinkable, then they just set the bar for the next person to get away with all the more. And that's basically what you're saying. It started with a Republican president, and it continues with a Democrat. And like you said earlier, it doesn't really matter what party they come from. There's this feeling of untouchability that causes them to do this.
Absolutely. And you know, when we think about, I tell my children, and in a few years I'll be able to tell my grandchildren, I consider it to be a sad day when sometimes all I'm left with to make a point is quoting a rock and roll band lyrics. But there was a great band called Creedence Clearwater Revival, the great John Fogerty, singer, songwriter, guitarist. And he has a song where one of the opening verses is, "Hey, you should remember that when we sing Hail to the Chief, they point the cannon at you."
Exactly.
And that was from the song Fortunate Son. And, of course, John Fogerty is saying, "I ain't no fortunate son." What he's saying is, "I'm not part of the political elite, okay? I'm the guy and the rest of my friends, we're the ones that fight these wars, these bloody wars that these politicians and Yale and Harvard graduates get us into." And so there's no question that we have a political elite. It's taken on almost the form of nobility. There were comments about the excesses of the Obama inauguration parties and parades, but this is really symbolic of who really has the power in this country, and power as distinguished from authority. And you know, when you start seeing high level journalists and academics and all of the elite, all of the lovely people, the elite, and they gather for these events, you really get a sense that we're just not in the equation anymore. You know, we're just not in the equation anymore. And you take a look at American policy, whether it's domestic policy, foreign policy, you know, we really have huge issues and problems here. And yet the Democrats and the Republicans are apparently content, with some exceptions, with a few good exceptions, to just make this a political stakes game. and they'll call each other names and argue bitterly over invented issues. And then the real issues, they might catch a headline or two, and then they're passed off to the bylines in the 26th page very quickly. So, yeah, this idea that there's no accountability, was it Kathleen Sebelius, former head of Health and Human Services, the cabinet secretary? Do you recall this, Joe, before she resigned? She said she was being questioned at a press conference, and she made a comment. She said, well, I don't work for you.
Right, yes.
and she was referencing the people.
Right.
And so many people were shocked by that, but she just made a frank, candid statement about what she believed. She believed and understood that as Health and Human Services Secretary, she didn't work for the people anymore.
Right.
She worked for the people that had appointed her. She worked for special interest groups. She worked for these very narrow power player cabals that, by and large, exercise most of the power in this country, but she just had the temerity, I suppose, or perhaps the foolishness to say it publicly. I don't work for you.
Well, the words and phrases that come out of their own mouths, you know, whether it be Pelosi saying that we have to pass the bill to see what's in it, or Obama talking about spreading the wealth, you know, saying that to Joe the plumber, or talking about the business that you own, that you didn't build that. Those are definitely windows into their minds and souls as to what they really believe. And it, you know, so it doesn't take a big investigation to see exactly what they're all about.
No, it doesn't. And just one more broad comment, and then we can talk a little bit more particularly about the IRS targeting scandal and then the cover-up, which I think is going to be perhaps a larger story than the original targeting issue was. I make a habit, just so I can keep my finger on the pulse of what the elite spinmeisters are up to, is I'll watch the Sunday morning programs with David Gregory or George Stephanopoulos.
Mm-hmm.
And I particularly will watch the George Stephanopoulos show, because George Will is on there periodically. And when you start, when those elites talk about modern political, economic, social issues, if you pay close attention to how they're speaking at a level that's designed for public consumption, the viewers of that program. But you can catch them periodically where they want to say things that they would say privately to their colleagues, but that they dastn't say, you know, in public. They'll catch themselves once in a while. And that happened yesterday, Sunday morning. They were talking about a particular political issue. And this gentleman, who was a first-timer on the program, he started to stammer and stutter, and he couldn't get to his issue, and you could see his eyes moving. You could see his brain saying, oh, my goodness, I got myself into one now. I can't say those things. How do I get out of this? And then you watch them verbally, rhetorically, try and back their way out of a sensitive subject that they just can't talk about. This comes to mind to George Will's comments on Stephanopoulos' program respecting the Detroit bankruptcy. And there's an issue for you, Joe. What happened to the news coverage of the Detroit bankruptcy?
Not to be found.
I mean, this is a hugely significant issue for America. This isn't, and I don't mean to demean the size or importance of Stockton, California, but you know, in Stockton, California, population 70,000 or 80,000, I believe, declared bankruptcy. You know, that was an important news story, but this is Detroit. This is one of the great industrial cities of America, Iron City. They built America through building the automobile, one of the great American cities, and it's absolutely bankrupt. So they were talking about the Detroit bankruptcy before they shelved it, and it's been shelved for months now. You don't see any serious reporting. You have to go to alternative media to get serious reporting on what's going on in Detroit. And they had to queue this up on Stephanopoulos' program. And I think it was Christine Vandenhoevel from The Nation magazine. She was on there, and she, of course, is opposite George Will politically. And George Will had the audacity to tell the truth about Detroit. And he looked at her because she made some comments that were vacuous and unilluminating, which she is, you know, wont to do. And Will just said, "Look, what we don't want to face is we've had a complete social collapse in Detroit. We've had a complete social structure collapse, which in turn has precipitated economic collapse. And the collapse that happened before either of those was the political collapse. That's what we don't want to talk about. We don't want to talk about the failures of government. We don't want to talk about the failures of the social fabric institutions like the churches and those sorts of things. And, you know, if it can happen in Detroit, it can happen in any city in America, and yet the news has been largely shelved. But Vandenhoevel was just horrified. And George Will put that a lot better than I just did. He's a smart guy, and you can learn something from him every once in a while if you listen carefully. But she was so horrified that he would have the audacity to talk about a social collapse. You know, as if we might be, the people of Detroit might in fact be responsible for the bankruptcy. Not just government, but because of failed policy and the collapse of social institutions.
Right, and relying on the government to step in and save the day when they never have. I mean, maybe in war, but even then you got to look at, well, why were these things, how these things come about in the first place? But they're very instructive. Well, we'll have the listeners have to check out the This Week show with George Stephanopoulos, if they can spell it correctly, to check out George Will's comments. That's interesting.
Yeah, Will made those comments many months ago when Detroit was a subject, you know, when Detroit was in the media, and it was in the media for a couple of weeks, and then it's been gone in the mainstream media. They don't talk about it anymore. But yeah, if it's probably on YouTube out there, his comments were superb, and the reaction of Vandenhoevel was just priceless. But so we have this IRS scandal going on here, where the IRS at the Cincinnati campus, I believe it was Cincinnati, is that right, Joe?
Yes.
The Cincinnati campus.
Yes.
Yeah, and initially I really was amused, and I this is a lot of gallows humor stuff for me. Of course, I wasn't amused, but you know, if you don't laugh once in a while at some of this stuff, you can become too dark. But I was amused when initially the administration tried to paint the Cincinnati campus as some like backwoods provincial outpost where the people at the Cincinnati, the IRS employees at the Cincinnati campus didn't get out enough. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember that?
Right.
And having been to the Cincinnati campus a couple of times, I knew that was just a bald-faced lie. That's absolutely false. This is a very large campus, a significant IRS campus, that has a number of very significant functions there, including the tax status of these organizations. So initially, it was like, you know, these were a bunch of bumpkins. You know, again, who didn't get out enough. They were so busy doing the business of the tax police state that they just didn't get out all that much. And, gosh, they were so insulated from ordinary IRS culture, that's how it happened. Well, you know, they left that narrative quickly because nobody bought that. And the bottom line is they were targeting political opponents of the establishment administration, and that's the Obama administration. So then, of course, when the investigations start, they're disdained by the Democrats and their apologists and Obama administration apologists as being, you know, purely partisan. Oh, that's just partisan politics. But ultimately, there were some subpoenas issued. And finally, when they're able to get a subpoena properly devised and legally served for the emails, they're gone. And nobody believes this. No one believes this, that the email, that there were servers that crashed and the emails. But not the internal IRS emails, Joe, right? Not the internal ones. So in other words, if there's any CPAs out there or tax lawyers or people that help people out with tax issues, don't get happy about this, because it's not like the IRS lost any of its internal records or any emails related to taxpayer cases. Oh, no. They didn't lose those. They just lost the emails that went outbound to the White House.
And I hate when that happens.
To be credible, you know.
They had it all prepared. They you know, and then Congress just sits around like with their thumb, you know where, you know, and like Paul Ryan, all he can say, he can admit that the IRS can turn people's lives upside down. So he knows that goes on. Yet, what does he do about it? Zero, except just pontificate up there on the dais. which, you know, I sound like a little bit cynical, but, you know, I mean, they've had how many decades to actually fix it, get a spine and fix it, and all they do is, you know, like you said, yell, you know, arrange the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, that's essentially the response. And you know what I'm thinking, though, Joe? I'll bet you that they got some NSA super spooks, you know, supercomputer sleuths working at National Security Agency. I'll bet you if they sent those boys down to the Cincinnati campus, they could locate those emails. What do you think?
I think they're ready and waiting, but they probably won't get assigned to do that.
Yeah, the idea that a couple of servers crashed and everything's lost. And you know what's so silly and stupid about that? I mean, I think you know, Joe, I'm a little bit of a hobbyist in terms of IT and computer technology. It started because I was an all-Apple law firm, and nobody could really help me with my stuff, so I learned a few things myself. But even the average American probably has some knowledge about the things I'm going to talk about here. They say a couple servers crashed. Well, what kind of servers? Were these, you know, mainframe servers that were serving not only data, but were the IRS email servers? And you know, if that's the case, are they serving their own emails, or are they using a contractor, internet service provider? None of these questions have been answered. And let's say that, just for the sake of argument, that, all right, the IRS is internally, in an insulated fashion, serving its own emails for security reasons. Okay, I get that. And they had a couple of email servers crash. All right, I understand that as well. But you're telling me that the IRS doesn't have any backup tape or hard drive system for all of its records? I mean, even small businesses these days will have some sort of backup system so that if your email server crashes or your data servers crash, that you have backups. We're led to believe, apparently, that not only did the email servers crash, but any security backup tape or hard drive system either wasn't being used, or if it was used, it crashed contemporaneously with the email server. And then it gets more ridiculous. What about the desktop and laptop computers that IRS operators used to send these emails, you know, to and from internal IRS colleagues, but also external taxpayers, tax professionals, and the White House? So you're saying that when the email servers crashed, that all of the emails that would have been resident on the desktop and laptop computers at the Cincinnati IRS campus, they all disappeared at the same time as well?
That's right. Even though I left in 99, I mean, even the technology at that point, we had an Outlook kind of email software, and it would be, the sent emails would be in your sent box because you might have to go back and refer to them. So, I mean, like you say, they're in multiple places and backed up real time 24/7.
Exactly. And now let's just say that there's a particular email technology called IMAP technology, and for different operating systems it might have slightly different names, but what it means is that if you're serving your own emails and you have an IMAP capable email server and the attendant software programs, that the email, you know, reloads. In other words, when you open up your laptop on an IMAP system, it has to have connectivity to the IMAP email server to refresh, if you will, the sent emails, the inbound emails, etc. And so you have to have network connectivity for it to be refreshed. But even in the instance where it was an IMAP email server, and that would be the case, they would be able to boot up another email server, and it would pull all that data. You know, again, the idea that all of this data just disappeared because a couple of servers crashed is preposterous. And Congress has to either order IRS to bring in an outside vendor to conduct a forensic investigation into their technology that was in use there. And look, if there's something we're missing here, then fine. Prove us wrong. Send a forensic computer investigation team in there and then release the report publicly. What sort of email systems did IRS have? What was the backup data systems? And what was the circumstances or the confluence of events and circumstances that yielded a complete and unrecoverable loss of all emails from the Cincinnati IRS campus externally, outside, and produce that report? And that's what Congress needs to do. It needs to order IRS to do that.
Right. And put, like, even the National Archives director said that they broke the law. I mean, he knows the protocols that they're supposed to follow in preserving the records for other agencies, like the National Archives. And so, I mean, there's just so many places that that data can be, but somehow everybody's chasing their tails and can't find it.
Yes, yeah, and you don't hear any real serious discussion about the technology, as if nobody, you and me and other people out there, your listeners, people around the country, apparently we're just not equipped to understand anything about technology. I got news, and I think you got news from too, Joe. Our kids, they teach us a little bit about technology here and there, and the average American knows a lot about these systems. And so my message to the government, to IRS, to the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, for the Obama administration, is to stop treating Americans like idiots and start telling the truth and giving us frank, honest, in-depth discussions about these important issues. And if they would do that, then they would have a lot less people criticizing them after the fact. The other thing I wanted to bump in...
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try iodine now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to AllGov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear, we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Agent for Truth Radio Show, brought to you courtesy of Truth Frequency Radio Network. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. First things first, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven, so let us pray together as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is in deep, deep trouble, and we need everybody to get it there into the boat and row with us. Don't just go along for the ride. We have a really special guest. All my guests are special, but this gentleman is extra. He's been there to help fight the battles with me, and praise God he has been, because I couldn't have done it without him. And that is Robert Bernhoft of the Bernhoft Law Firm. Their website is bernhoftlaw.com, spelled B-E-R-N-H-O-F-T, bernhoftlaw.com. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's a real pleasure to appear again and talk to you about stuff that really matters today.
Well, it's awesome to have you, and this is a no-caller show so that we can just fill it with as much of the information that you can provide to the listeners as possible. Thought that we could talk about a few different things, but why don't we start with the some current events, like the IRS scandal. There's so many of them, but let's talk about the one that's so fresh in everyone's minds. The lost emails, Lois Lerner taking the fifth, the targeting of particular groups. Why don't you lay the groundwork and just tell people what's really going on?
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate it. And this is a really important topic. So often over the past several years, maybe the past 4 or 5 years, the usual suspect talking heads and spin doctors and meisters and meistresses want to, pass off or disdain scandals relating to agencies or government transparency, government corruption, these sorts of issues, particularly during the Obama administration for the past 5 or 6 years. And certainly it is true in our hotly charged political environment with the, in my view, different sides of the same coin, the Republicans and the Democrats lobbing verbal rhetorical bombs at each other rather than getting down to brass tacks of talking about serious policy issues that affect Americans here on Main Street, down on the ground level. So we want to be careful when we take a look at certain news items and do our own vetting and do our own investigation. And I think everybody on your show does that. That's one of the reasons I love appearing here. We know that your listeners are paying attention. They're doing their own homework. They're fact-checking. This is a real scandal of significant proportion. And I'll tell you why. One of the things that hasn't been talked about in the IRS's explicit targeting of libertarian, Tea Party, constitutionalist, and or conservative political advocacy groups is the history of IRS and administrations, executive branch officials using IRS for political purposes. Recall that there was the old Bureau of Internal Revenue back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and then it changed to the Internal Revenue Service, and then we had the 1954 Internal Revenue Code. But that's still a fairly new creature, this Internal Revenue Service, on the scale of history. So we have to go back to the Nixon administration, Joe. But many people don't recollect, and it wasn't much talked about for years after Nixon's resignation. but it was a hot topic before his impeachment and resignation, and that is that Nixon, the accusation, and it was proved after the fact, the accusation that Nixon had done the unthinkable and he had turned the American tax police against his political opponents. And when I say he did the unthinkable, it was always considered absolutely off limits, an absolute political taboo to take an agency, an entity like the Internal Revenue Service, with the extraordinary civil and criminal investigative powers that IRS has, and use it for political purposes. That is to say, give the IRS a list of your enemies and your opponents, which Nixon did, and tell them to go get them. And in many ways, this was considered back prior to impeachment, again, and resignation. Many insiders believe that Nixon's greatest sin, if you will, was using the IRS for his own political benefit against his perceived and actual enemies. It's a very significant issue. But subsequently, people don't really recall that, and it's not much talked about. So let's fast forward to the last year to 18 months, 2 years or so, and now we have President Obama in office. And it's my view, it's my belief, that if a real investigation with proper subpoena power is ever conducted by the Senate or the House, that we will in fact find out that the Obama administration, they essentially crossed the Rubicon. They crossed the river that you're never supposed to cross, and I believe he would be the first president since Nixon's impeachment and resignation that has utilized the IRS for expressly political purposes. And I think it says something about the current administration, not just President Obama, but the people, his chief advisors and the people that he surrounded himself with, the sort of things they're willing to do for political benefit. And so that's the historical background for what I think is an extraordinarily important issue. It is a scandal of significant proportion. If it ever gets investigated, I believe it will lead directly to the Oval Office. Lesser things have brought presidents down. So we're watching it very carefully.
Couldn't agree more. And what's sad is that every time a president or congressman, they lower the bar, you know, and they do the unthinkable, then they just set the bar for the next person to get away with all the more. And that's basically what you're saying. It started with a Republican president, and it continues with a Democrat, and like you said earlier, it doesn't really matter what party they come from. There's this feeling of untouchability that causes them to do this.
Absolutely, and you know, when we think about, I tell my children, and in a few years I'll be able to tell my grandchildren, I consider it to be a sad day when sometimes all I'm left with to make a point is quoting a rock and roll band lyrics. But there was a great band called Creedence Clearwater Revival, the great John Fogerty, singer, songwriter, guitarist, and he has a song where one of the opening verses is, "Hey, you should remember that when we sing Hail to the Chief, they point the cannon at you."
Exactly.
And that was from the song Fortunate Son. And, of course, John Fogerty is saying, "I ain't no fortunate son." What he's saying is, I'm not part of the political elite, okay? I'm the guy, and the rest of my friends, we're the ones that fight these wars, these bloody wars that these politicians and Yale and Harvard graduates get us into. And so there's no question that we have a political elite. It's taken on almost the form of nobility. There were comments about the excesses of the Obama inauguration parties and parades, but this is really symbolic of who really has the power in this country, and power as distinguished from authority. And you know, when you start seeing high level journalists and academics and all of the elite, all of the lovely people, the elite, and they gather for these events, you really get a sense that we're just not in the equation anymore. You know, we're just not in the equation anymore. And you take a look at American policy, whether it's domestic policy, foreign policy, you know, we really have huge issues and problems here, and yet the Democrats and the Republicans are apparently content, with some exceptions, with a few good exceptions, to just make this a political stakes game. and they'll call each other names and argue bitterly over invented issues. And then the real issues, they might catch a headline or two, and then they're passed off to the bylines in the 26th page very quickly. So yeah, this idea that there's no accountability, was it Kathleen Sebelius, former head of Health and Human Services, the cabinet secretary? Do you recall this, Joe, before she resigned? She said she was being questioned at a press conference, and she made a comment. She said, well, I don't work for you.
Right, yes.
and she was referencing the people.
Right.
And so many people were shocked by that, but she just made a frank, candid statement about what she believed. She believed and understood that as Health and Human Services Secretary, she didn't work for the people anymore.
Right.
She worked for the people that had appointed her. She worked for special interest groups. She worked for these very narrow power player cabals that, by and large, exercise most of the power in this country. But she just had the temerity, I suppose, or perhaps the foolishness to say it publicly. I don't work for you.
Well, the words and phrases that come out of their own mouths, you know, whether it be Pelosi saying that we have to pass the bill to see what's in it, or Obama talking about spreading the wealth, you know, saying that to Joe the plumber, or talking about the business that you own, that you didn't build that. Those are definitely windows into their minds and souls as to what they really believe. And it, you know, so it doesn't take a big investigation to see exactly what they're all about.
No, it doesn't. And just one more broad comment, and then we can talk a little bit more particularly about the IRS targeting scandal and then the cover-up, which I think is going to be perhaps a larger story than the original targeting issue was. I make a habit, just so I can keep my finger on the pulse of what the elite spinmeisters are up to, is I'll watch the Sunday morning programs with David Gregory or George Stephanopoulos.
Mm-hmm.
And I particularly will watch the George Stephanopoulos show because George Will is on there periodically. And when you start, when those elites talk about modern political, economic, social issues, if you pay close attention to how they're speaking at a level that's designed for public consumption, the viewers of that program. But you can catch them periodically where they want to say things that they would say privately to their colleagues, but that they dastn't say, you know, in public. They'll catch themselves once in a while. And that happened yesterday, Sunday morning. They were talking about a particular political issue. And this gentleman, who was a first-timer on the program, he started to stammer and stutter, and he couldn't get to his issue, and you could see his eyes moving. You could see his brain saying, oh, my goodness, I got myself into one now. I can't say those things. How do I get out of this? And then you watch them verbally, rhetorically, try and back their way out of a sensitive subject that they just can't talk about. This comes to mind to George Will's comments on Stephanopoulos' program respecting the Detroit bankruptcy. And there's an issue for you, Joe. What happened to the news coverage of the Detroit bankruptcy?
Not to be found.
I mean, this is a hugely significant issue for America. This isn't, and I don't mean to demean the size or importance of Stockton, California, but you know, in Stockton, California, population 70,000 or 80,000, I believe, declared bankruptcy. You know, that was an important news story, but this is Detroit. This is one of the great industrial cities of America, Iron City. They built America through building the automobile, one of the great American cities, and it's absolutely bankrupt. So they were talking about the Detroit bankruptcy before they shelved it, and it's been shelved for months now. You don't see any serious reporting. You have to go to alternative media to get serious reporting on what's going on in Detroit. And they had to queue this up on Stephanopoulos' program. And I think it was Christine Vandenhoevel from The Nation magazine. She was on there, and she, of course, is opposite George Will politically. And George Will had the audacity to tell the truth about Detroit. And he looked at her because she made some comments that were vacuous and unilluminating, which she is, you know, wont to do. And Will just said, look, What we don't want to face is we've had a complete social collapse in Detroit. We've had a complete social structure collapse, which in turn has precipitated economic collapse. And the collapse that happened before either of those was the political collapse. That's what we don't want to talk about. We don't want to talk about the failures of government. We don't want to talk about the failures of the social fabric institutions like the churches and those sorts of things. And, you know, if it can happen in Detroit, it can happen in any city in America, and yet the news has been largely shelved. But Vandenhoevel was just horrified. And George Will put that a lot better than I just did. He's a smart guy, and you can learn something from him every once in a while if you listen carefully. But she was so horrified that he would have the audacity to talk about a social collapse. You know, as if we're actually, we might be, the people of Detroit might in fact be responsible for the bankruptcy. Not just government, but because of failed policy and the collapse of social institutions.
Right, relying on the government to step in and save the day when they never have. I mean, maybe in war, but even then you got to look at, well, why were these things, how these things come about in the first place? But they're very instructive. Well, we'll have the listeners have to check out the This Week show with George Stephanopoulos, if they can spell it correctly, to check out George Will's comments. That's interesting.
Yeah, Will made those comments many months ago when Detroit was a subject, you know, when Detroit was in the media, and it was in the media for a couple weeks, and then it's been gone in the mainstream media. They don't talk about it anymore. But yeah, if it's probably on YouTube out there, his comments were superb, and the reaction of Vandenhoevel was just priceless. But so we have this IRS scandal going on here, where the IRS at the Cincinnati campus, I believe it was Cincinnati, is that right, Joe?
Yes.
The Cincinnati campus.
Yes.
Yeah, and initially I really was amused, and I this is a lot of gallows humor stuff for me. Of course, I wasn't amused, but you know, if you don't laugh once in a while at some of this stuff, you can become too dark. But I was amused when initially the administration tried to paint the Cincinnati campus as some like backwoods provincial outpost where the people at the IRS employees at the Cincinnati campus didn't get out enough. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember that?
Right.
And having been to the Cincinnati campus a couple of times, I knew that was just a bald-faced lie. That's absolutely false. This is a very large campus, a significant IRS campus, that has a number of very significant functions there, including the tax status of these organizations. So initially, it was like, you know, these were a bunch of bumpkins. You know, again, who didn't get out enough. They were so busy doing the business of the tax police state that they just didn't get out all that much. And, gosh, they were so insulated from ordinary IRS culture, that's how it happened. Well, you know, they left that narrative quickly because nobody bought that. And the bottom line is they were targeting political opponents of the establishment administration, and that's the Obama administration. So then, of course, when the investigations start, they're disdained by the Democrats and their apologists and Obama administration apologists as being, you know, purely partisan. Oh, that's just partisan politics. But ultimately, there were some subpoenas issued. And finally, when they're able to get a subpoena properly devised and legally served for the emails, they're gone. And nobody believes this. No one believes this, that the email, that there were servers that crashed and the emails. But not the internal IRS emails, Joe, right? Not the internal ones. So in other words, if there's any CPAs out there or tax lawyers or people that help people out with tax issues, don't get happy about this, because it's not like the IRS lost any of its internal records or any emails related to taxpayer cases. Oh, no. They didn't lose those. They just lost the emails that went outbound to the White House.
And I hate when that happens.
To be credible, you know.
They had it all prepared. And then Congress just sits around like with their thumb, you know where, you know, and like Paul Ryan, all he can say, he can admit that the IRS can turn people's lives upside down. So he knows that goes on. Yet, what does he do about it? Zero, except just pontificate up there on the dais. which, you know, I sound like a little bit cynical, but, you know, I mean, they've had how many decades to actually fix it, get a spine and fix it, and all they do is, you know, like you said, yell, you know, arrange the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, that's essentially the response. And you know what I'm thinking, though, Joe? I'll bet you that they got some NSA super spooks, you know, supercomputer sleuths working at National Security Agency. I'll bet you if they sent those boys down to the Cincinnati campus, they could locate those emails. What do you think?
I think they're ready and waiting, but they probably they probably won't get assigned to do that.
Yeah, the idea that a couple of servers crashed and everything's lost. And you know what's so silly and stupid about that? I mean, I think you know, Joe, I'm a little bit of a hobbyist in terms of IT and computer technology. It started because I was an all-Apple law firm, and nobody could really help me with my stuff, so I learned a few things myself. But even the average American probably has some knowledge about the things I'm going to talk about here. They say a couple servers crashed. Well, what kind of servers? Were these, you know, mainframe servers that were serving not only data, but were the IRS email servers? And you know, if that's the case, are they serving their own emails, or are they using a contractor, internet service provider? None of these questions have been answered. And let's say that, just for the sake of argument, that, all right, the IRS is internally, in an insulated fashion, serving its own emails for security reasons. Okay, I get that. And they had a couple of email servers crash. All right, I understand that as well. But you're telling me that the IRS doesn't have any backup tape or hard drive system for all of its records? I mean, even small businesses these days will have some sort of backup system so that if your email server crashes or your server, your data servers crash, that you have backups. We're led to believe, apparently, that not only did the email servers crash, but any security backup tape or hard drive system either wasn't being used, or if it was used, it crashed contemporaneously with email server. And then it gets more ridiculous. What about the desktop and laptop computers that IRS operators use to send these emails, you know, to and from internal IRS colleagues, but also external taxpayers, tax professionals, and the White House? So you're saying that when the email servers crashed, that all of the emails that would have been resident on the desktop and laptop computers at the Cincinnati IRS campus, they all disappeared at the same time as well?
That's right. Even though I left in 99, I mean, even the technology at that point, we had a, you know, an Outlook kind of email software, and it would be, the sent emails would be in your sent box because you might have to go back and refer to them. So, I mean, like you say, they're in multiple places and backed up real time 24/7.
Exactly. And now let's just say that there's a particular email technology called IMAP technology, and for different operating systems it might have slightly different names. But what it means is that if you're serving your own emails and you have an IMAP capable email server and the attendant software programs, that the email, you know, reloads. In other words, when you open up your laptop on an IMAP system, it has to have connectivity to the IMAP email server to refresh, if you will, the sent emails, the inbound emails, etc. And so you have to have network connectivity for it to be refreshed. But even in the instance where it was an IMAP email server, and that would be the case, they would be able to boot up another email server, and it would pull all that data. You know, again, the idea that all of this data just disappeared because a couple of servers crashed is preposterous. And Congress has to either order IRS to bring in an outside vendor to conduct a forensic investigation into their technology that was in use there. And look, if there's something we're missing here, then fine, prove us wrong. Send a forensic computer investigation team in there, and then release the report publicly. What sort of email systems did IRS have? What was the backup data systems? And what was the circumstances or the confluence of events and circumstances that yielded a complete and unrecoverable loss of all emails from the Cincinnati IRS campus externally outside? and produce that report. And that's what Congress needs to do. It needs to order IRS to do that.
Right. And put, like, even the National Archives director said,
take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free silver calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel? Boycott an empire of theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Oh, hi, everybody. I'm a Republican. I'm running for President of the United States of America. You may have heard that my liberal opponent grants amnesty to illegal immigrants. Well, I personally have gone down to the Rio Grande, puncture holes in raft boats trying to get across my border. She has repeatedly voted to extend welfare benefits to single mothers and supports funding for Planned Parenthood and women's clinics. Whereas I've done everything to shut down any women's health center, regardless of what they offer. Why should we give benefits to godless whores who can't keep their legs together? And speaking of God, you know there's something wrong with this country when some atheist, who's a woman, who's probably a lesbian, can openly run for president. No, no.